This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Hi, I'm Tony La Russa, and you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box with Pete Caliendo.
This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone from around the world, and thanks for joining us on another great episode of Baseball Outside the Box, the show that brings you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, listen, a special thanks to our producer, Brian Crack, with the Lineup Media Group. Don't forget, go to lineupmediagroup.fm. Check out all the shows. They've got thousands of them in all different categories. Fantastic podcast. And don't forget, we are on Twitter at Baseball Out and Facebook, Baseball Outside the Box. Do us a favor, share that with everybody you know in the game so they can also listen to the show and get educated. Our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. You know how to go there. Go to iTunes or Stitcher, join the show, get updates. And if you love the show, please give us a 5-star rating. We would love that. Just helps keep going or keeps the show going. Don't forget, if you're a new listener, join the show. You're going to love it. Just follow it. And if you're a current listener, we appreciate it. You can really help us a lot. If you love the show, spread all the information. All right, we're excited today. Guess where we're at? We are back in Vancouver, Canada. We come here every year. One of the best places in the world when it comes not only to sightseeing, but also to the development of the sport of baseball. They've got some of the greatest people here, volunteers who do an outstanding job, understand baseball development from top to bottom. We'll tell you a little bit more as we're talking throughout the show. And what's great about here, we don't bring many guests back, but we've got a couple that we brought back, and we've got a special guest today that we brought back, and both of us happen to be speaking at the baseball convention here, BC Baseball. The organization has over 20,000 players who believes in the grassroots level. We're both speaking at the convention. We're expecting over 200 coaches to attend the convention. These people really love baseball and really understand it and want to get better. So today we're going to have Jeff Crochelle. And remember now, Jeff was on the show, so go back and listen to the other episode because I think it'll help with this one. They go back to back. Jeff is known as the Crusher, as the host of and founder of the Crush Performance Radio Show, aired on RadioInfluence.com and TSN 1260 Edmonton. Crochelle's the founder of Crush Performance. Now, do me a favor. You've got to go to the podcast. I listen to every show he has. Outstanding. Covers every aspect of sports performance. Everything from understanding sleep, getting good habits in sleep and nutrition, you name it, conditioning. I mean, all the way across the board. It's really a great show. So currently he's the strength and conditioning consultant for Major League Baseball International. He's an international speaker. We're very honored to have him as a speaker with the International Sports Group. Well, we love having Jeff with us anywhere we can get him, even though he's very difficult to get because he's all over the world and he's pretty busy. He's the athlete and team performance specialist, noted as an expert in human performance and talent development. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about him. Jeff is an accomplished entrepreneur on radio and television, along with print media, where he forged relationships with not just athletes, but internationally renowned sports elitist, coaches, sports scientists, doctors, business specialists, and researchers, all of who have constantly pushed the boundaries of human performance. And that's where we love. That's why we love to have him on Baseball Outside the Box. He's got over 25 years of experience. Now, he also has worked with world-class Olympic athletes. And I can keep going on and on and on because he's got so much experience. But you're going to know just by listening to him talk. As soon as he starts talking, you're going to know that he's one of the top experts when it comes to performance. So we're going to talk about his book, The Performance Plan. You're going to hear about that. So first of all, after the introduction, let me welcome Jeff Crochelle to the show.
Pete, thanks so much for having me, my good man.
I'll tell you what, it's great to be here again back in Vancouver. I know this is becoming a yearly habit.
Yeah, I love it back here. Whenever you have a dedicated group of people that are looking at grassroots development, you got to get involved as much as possible. I love coming here, and this is one passionate group. And I think, when we look at the terrain in Canada, the baseball terrain, this is why this area is one of the hot spots.
Yeah, you know what? And I think we're going to let the folks know around the world because, you know, for the last 7 years, I've been lucky to do a caravan here with them. You know, they traveled all over Vancouver Island, 14 different cities in about 16 days. We've done that for 7 years, and what the plan is, and that's Mike Kelly and the group here with Mike Srider, president. They had this plan about educating coaches, players, and parents. You know, not just the coaches and the players, but also the parents. What we found is an increase in participation. It's a model that I believe should be taken all over the world. And I know that you're familiar with the Canadian model of, you know, athletic, long-term athletic development. These guys have done a great job. And since we're on that, real quickly, you know, tell our audience, you know, Canada's done a great job when it comes to baseball development.
Canada has been a pioneer, and even inside of the Canadian sport model, I can tell you this, every single major sport in Canada is always keeping an eye on Baseball Canada. Baseball Canada, Andre Lachance, Greg Hamilton, Jason Dixon, all the good guys over at Baseball Canada, they are constantly looking for ways to improve the games, improve player experience, and also I move the needle of development to the next level. And I can honestly tell you, when I talk to the guys at Hockey Canada or Basketball Canada or Figure Skating Canada, Freestyle, there's a great sharing of information in those sports. And Baseball Canada's always pushing the limits. And that's why I think, you know, as we travel the globe, Pete, you'll hear people talk about the Canadian program.
Absolutely.
Right up to that very, very special jewel that is their junior national program. There's nothing like that program on the face of the earth. And I think one of the reasons in this, you know, snow-covered country of 37 million people, one of the big reasons they produce so many high-end baseball players.
You know, you brought up something interesting. I want you to talk about this. You said that you share ideas with other sports. Give our coaches an idea, especially around the world, how another sport can help you in the game of baseball, understanding what they're doing.
Yeah, and this is a real important conversation. So one of the things Canada really noticed a few years back when the long-term athlete development program was coming together is that the idea of specialization early for most sports is a real dangerous, dangerous game to play. So one of the issues inside of that is the seasons are overlapping. It's literally impossible for a baseball player typically to go on and enter a hockey program in the fall because baseball is still going, and vice versa for soccer and basketball and volleyball. So in the big picture, and this is why you got to be proud to sort of, I am personally proud, and everybody in Sport Canada should be kind of proud to push the limits forward. The leaders of the different sports got together and they put endpoints and start points collectively on their seasons, so young athletes can go from sport to sport. And at the end of the day, we know that raises the ceiling of potential for athletes that want to go on and pursue a high performance sport, or also for kids who just want to be well-rounded and enjoy a bunch of different sports. So that is probably one of the big things. So for example, here's a great example. Hockey Canada and Baseball Canada got together. Hockey Canada put out a list of, hey, the top five winter sports for baseball players. Hockey, skiing, curling, tobogganing, whatever it might be, right? Great sports for baseball players in the winter. Hockey reciprocated and did the same thing. Lacrosse, baseball, you know, beach volleyball, mountain biking. And then they released the top summer sports for goalies, which are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So this collective sort of approach to athlete development isn't just great for a particular sport like baseball or hockey or basketball. It's great for society. And I'm telling you right now, if you look at what Canada does population-wise, they're truly a global powerhouse in developing high-performance sport. Yeah. But also, at the real important side of it, our participation numbers, lifelong participation numbers, aren't going down like they are most places around the world. They're going up. Wow. So mission accomplished on still a lot of work to do, but we're moving in the right direction here.
You know, that's a great model. I think a lot of countries definitely need to follow it. Let's start right now with the young kids, the coaches that are working with young kids. Let's talk about, if we're just starting from scratch and we're just going to start develop young kids at an age of whether it be 9 or 10 or 11 years old, for a coach, when you talk about performance, where does a coach start? Does he start with the skills? Where does he begin? Where's the best place to begin and then go from there?
Oh, I have one word for you, Pete, and it's a four-letter word, yeah. So be careful.
Yeah, that's right.
Plan. Just plan. A simple, simple plan. It is crazy how simple it can actually be, and probably easy for you and I to say because we've lived and breathed sport forever. But think of a parent coming in who maybe didn't have a chance to play baseball when they were young, or hockey, or whatever it might be. What does it take to put together a team program in a sport you've never participated in before. It's incredibly hard.
Sure.
So it does take some planning. And the planning makes it really easy. Here's what I say, but let's get back to the start and set it up. Look at your annual program. Look at your weekly program, and then look at your sessions and start laying it out. There is a fine balance, and you can do it. You can do everything, believe it or not. If you have an hour twice a week with your players, maximize that hour. If you have 4 hours each week with your players, maximize those 4 hours, whatever it might be. But if you break it down and simplify it and reverse engineer, oh, the impact is unbelievable. So at the start of your season, you know, 2-3 weeks before, if you know that you're going to be going through, you know, May and June, and you're going to have, you know, 20 practices and 12 games, you can easily lay out a plan. Here's what I would say. Doesn't matter the age group, inside of each practice session, block up your plan to have a really, really good warm-up. And that warm-up, we could talk about that all day, Pete. It is maybe for me the most valuable piece of property on the clock that you'll ever have, because not only are you getting your athletes ready for the game, whatever it might be, baseball, here is our topic, but you can also use it as a developmental period. Teach movement skills. Get them running backwards. Get them understanding where they are in space. And at every single level, including our big league guys, that's freaking important.
Right.
Then get into your skills, however you want to roll at your practice for that particular day. And depending on how many coaches you have and how much time you have and the facilities available, you can maximize your program. And you don't have to have all the bells and whistles. You just have to have a good plan, Pete.
Now, let's say you have that plan and you don't have the athletic work and the athletic development, the movement and all that. Give our coaches, because, you know, to you and I, like you said, we may understand this a little bit better than most, but give our coaches out there that are maybe just starting off, if they, for 2-3 years, if they only did baseball and only did baseball training, sure, maybe they warmed up, they ran a little bit, you know, get the body flowing, and then most of them will just play catch and then get ready to go. What's the cause effect of that? What's the negative part?
Well, I'm telling you what, here's what I can tell you. If we took a team of 10-year-old players, boys and girls mixed together that just love the game of baseball, and we had a group and we cloned them, say we had twin teams, and we put one team, they just played the game of baseball. And the other team, we strategically worked in a warm-up, a progressive skill development program for a 3-year period. At the end of those 3 years, you, if you were to be a scout in the stands, dropped in the stands watching these two teams play each other, first of all, you would not be able to recognize one team from the other. And second, the team that had been through a progressive athlete development, skill development program would be light years ahead of the other team. Baseball is a very, very unique game, Pete, where, you know, when you get to a certain level, it actually probably takes away more than it gives back. You have to prepare for the game of baseball, even just to have fun. And the great thing is that preparation can be a ton of fun if you set it up right.
And coaches around the world, parents also, and players, if you want to get a hold of Jeff, he's on Twitter all the time at Jeff Crush, and also at crushperformance.com is his website. You can get a hold of him there. And he also, I'm going to let him tell you right now about it before I get to the next question. He's got on Facebook, Crush Performance, he's got the Talent Grid. So I'm going to tell the audience a little bit about the Talent Grid.
Yeah. Talent Grid is a group that I put together, it's a group of athletes. There's some of the best sports scientists in that group. There's top nutritionists, and there's moms and dads. But it's a membership group that we put together for people who are really, truly passionate and inquisitive about just human performance. And we have people from all walks of sport. We've got hockey guys. We've got soccer guys. We've got guys from Europe. There's people from Japan in there. People from South America. It's turned out to be a lot of fun. Now, the issue is you got to get in there and contribute to that group. It's been a great sharing of information, and it's been a ton of fun. I've never been a social media guy in the past. But I'm really starting to enjoy it, Pete. It's a great way to connect and just share ideas.
Yeah, and it's a quick way to get things out and let people know about the information. It's awesome. And if you haven't been on his social media, you got to go. And like I said, go to the podcast. I listen to it all the time. I'm constantly learning from it. Let's jump back to the warm-ups just for a second because of the young coaches. podcast is tough. So, but give them an idea, a little bit about, you know, some type of warm-ups that can be done prior to when they're going to play catch.
Yeah. So two things you need to think of right off the start. If we want our kids to love the game of baseball and continue to play, they have to be good at the game. It's one of the toughest, most challenging games for any athlete at any level to be successful in, especially if you don't have an athletic base to support the skill development. So at the higher levels, here's what we talk about, Pete. We talk about developing athletic talent so the coaches can coach the players to new levels. Because every single coach on the planet, listen to me carefully, every single coach on the planet is limited in their ability to coach a player by the player's athletic ability. If a player can't physically do or mentally do what the coach is asking them to do, very tough to be successful. So it really, really works. It's a beautiful marriage, especially when young coaches at the early ages can start incorporating this stuff. And what you will find is that extra 5-10 minutes you spend in a warm-up period running around cones pays off dividends when you start coaching your players on the plate or on the bases or in the field, because the crossover is almost, it's almost as pure as you can get it. There's 100% crossover, especially if you teach it right. So a simple warm-up plan would be just setting out cones 10 yards apart. Let's say if you have 12 players in your team, three rows of four players. Mm-hmm. They'll do a sprint around the cones, and then they'll do a sprint backpedal around the cones. They'll do a shuffle. And for the young kids, we're not worried about technical stuff. Yeah. Most kids can't shuffle.
Right.
And they can't do a karaoke grapevine step. And running backwards might be one of the most important things we ever do for our young athletes. I don't care what sport they're in. Run backwards every single day. It will help them move in any other plane of direction for sure. So those little things right there are invaluable. Now listen, if we look at the developmental curve of a human, there are periods of development that are absolutely critical. And again, I joke about this all the time in my presentations when the timing's right, but and I do seriously joke, but there's also serious undertones to this statement. Mm-hmm. And this is what I say, kind of joking around. I say, you know, if I was ever named king of sport, I would make sure that the 9, 10, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds get some real special attention, because that's the age group where skill acquisition happens. And once that window closes, it's gone forever.
Mm.
Your ceiling can either raise to the stratosphere or drop to the top of the grass in your 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old range, because that's where your nervous system, your brain, the coordination, and everything comes together to sort of develop your future. And that's where, you know, this whole thing we talked about earlier with Baseball Canada and Hockey Canada and Basketball Canada, making sure at that age group kids get multiple sports – is so important. We need to be as diverse as possible through those age range. If you want top baseball players, you better make sure they're playing different sports in those age range.
Yeah, you know what? I love it. I'm glad you brought that up, because on the show we constantly talk about that, and I know more people are getting the message.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, even in the U.S., we got a lot of teams right now starting at 6 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old that are travel clubs, and they only play baseball.
Well, here's one of the problems. When developmental sport became a business, it was a tragedy for actual development.
Mm.
Because now we have people, and don't get me wrong, with the best intentions, trying to create great environments for young athletes,
sure,
but they're charging a dollar for it, and they're paying their mortgages with it, and they're paying their bills, and that becomes a problem. And I've seen it firsthand, even with my daughters and my nephew,
yeah,
where the soccer club doesn't want him to go skiing because, well, one, they lose an athlete. And if he decides to go ski, now skiing gets that revenue, yeah, and they lose it. So a lot of the times, and this is where I get frustrated a little bit, it's not about the athlete's welfare. It's about the revenue. And so I think if we all think big picture, which is incredibly hard to do,
sure,
we'll do a lot of great things for our sport model. That being said, okay, specialization is not going away. It's a reality now. Yeah. And if you are running a program or part of a program where your athletes are playing one sport, especially in early ages, you had better make sure that over the course of your annual plan, you mix in other activities, non-sport specific activities. And if you do, you get a gold star from us, that's for sure.
You know, great advice. And that's why I love the podcast too. The more podcasts we have that have good information like yours and ours, you know, and then they're free, the more, you know, volunteer coaches especially, because, you know, they're volunteers. If we can offer more to them, it just helps them, helps, you know, the game, helps grow the game. Now, another factor that I got to believe is a tough one for young kids and coaches that are working with young kids is a lot of these kids don't have a lot of strength. So now you're doing the agility work and all the work that you're talking about. How about the strength aspect? How do you mix that in a short period of time? Because these guys don't have a lot of time, you know, a lot of time to practice.
Yeah, beautiful. And this is a conundrum in sport across the board. And, you know, we see it at every single level, especially at the age where kids are starting to project to higher performance sports, college or pro sports or whatever it might be. But that's when it starts to get really dangerous. Here is the plan, Pete, okay? When we have our young players, and this is one of the beautiful things, anybody in the world can go on. And this is one of the things, again, proud of the Canadian model. Anybody in the world can tap into whatever sport they're in. It could be synchronized swimming, mm-hmm. or water polo. It could be downhill skiing or baseball. You can go on to the Baseball Canada site and punch in long-term athlete development, ice hockey. Mm-hmm. Long-term athlete development, Baseball Canada, boom, check it out. And you will see the progressive development plan that they put together for young athletes. And the beautiful thing is the Canadians share it with everybody.
Everyone, yes.
Because they believe in sport, yeah. And they believe the value of sport, not just in Canada, in the borders, but for our world, collectively as human beings. It is such a powerful tool. Now, that being said, strength is a very, very curious area for sport performance because everybody thinks if you're stronger, you're better. And I'm here to tell you, no. Strength does not equal performance. So here's just a quick little scenario for you. If we took a majority of time and dedicated it to building strength rather than teaching our athletes how to move, what do you get at the end of the day? A bunch of strong young people, athletes, yeah. who can't move.
Right.
What would happen if we, through the developmental years, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, even 13, 14, and 15, really taught our athletes how to become accomplished, well-rounded, balanced movers. While we work on posture, especially for one-sided sports like baseball, golf, tennis, even hockey, balance their postures. And then what do you get at the end of the day? You get an unbelievable mover who then you can make stronger to become an even better mover. Here's what I'll tell you. The only reason any of our athletes ever enter the weight room, and I'm talking even our pro guys, our college guys, our development guys, our kids, the only time they ever develop or enter the weight room is so that strength work can help them become better movers. It's the only way we use the weight room to balance posture, asymmetries from sport, from the stresses of sport, but to create strength so they can become even more accomplished movers. So movement first, strength is down the road, trust me.
And when you say balance posture, explain a little bit, maybe in baseball, a particular drill in baseball that means balance posture. How do you balance the posture in that?
Because baseball is so one-sided, and for pitchers most certainly, mm-hmm. and not just that, but the hitters as well, we see great imbalances in muscle development, even through the hips. If everybody were just to stand up right now and just mimic a baseball swing and hold the finish position, look how your front hip is rotated. Look how your back hip is rotated. Now do that thousands and thousands and thousands of time without anything else to offset that, your body actually grows in a way that is determined by that movement. Same thing happens in throwing. And that's why when we see our young athletes, when I get access or when I start working with young athletes, sometimes it's too late. And that's why I say, you know, jokingly again, if I were king of sport, man, I would spend all of my time, 9, 10, 11, and 12 years of age. First of all, it's so much fun. I've spent a lot of time there,
absolutely.
Pete, especially over the last 5, 6 years. And I think in my future, you know, as much as there's opportunities, even at the highest level of the game, I think if the right opportunity came up, I would spend the last of my days helping those kids because that, I'm telling you, would change the future landscape of sport.
You know, I agree with you 100%. I tell you why, because first of all, you love working with that age group and, you know, they want to learn and they also like to have fun still, you know, so it's a fun age group to work with. Now, I got to say this because I love what you just said. And the reason I'm going to bring it up is because I'm going to take a person like myself who doesn't have the background you came from. You know, I have a coaching background just by being at a baseball school, learn from great coaches, and then I learned on my own from there. But one of the things, and I'm thrilled that you said it because you and I never talked about this. One of the things that I always have done for the last probably 10 years with very young kids especially, is tell them that swing, right? And then freeze at the end. So you're working on your balance, exactly what you talked about. The body will control itself, will work on the things that it's doing wrong and maybe correct them. And for me to hear you say that, and you come from an expertise background, just makes me feel good because I know I'm doing something good. Because sometimes you're not always sure if you're doing it right or wrong.
Yeah.
But my question in all this is this: when that youngster, when you talk about the balanced posture, what about if a player is swinging the bat and then he swings it the opposite way? Would
love
that be?
I absolutely love that for sure. And you know what? Jokingly, we get our younger kids even to throw with their offhand. We'll get them to start warming up. Hey, guys, throw with your offhand. You know, and everybody will feel funny and goofy and everything. But in terms of motor coordination and in terms of enhancing your dominant side performance, there's a magical formula there as well. That's a conversation for another day. Wow. But non-dominant side training is a powerful, powerful tool for top-end performance. So in our warm-up, here's another great example when we talk about, you know, the hitting and the imbalances in our hips. A simple trunk rotation, you know, a trunk rotation. Twisting all the way to the right, twisting all the way to the left. That warm-up period might be the only time a young athlete, young baseball player, might twist their hips the opposite way from their hitting side. Mm. And so that's just one of the little things that you get out of a good warm-up. Not to mention teach, if you know, when we work with our developmental coaches, we talk to them a lot about setting up posture, Pete, how to set your pelvis for power, where should your rib cage be, you know, how do your ear, shoulders, hips align. If your ear, shoulder, hip, and knee are in a straight line up and down, you're in a pretty good posture. And there's not too many kids that stand like that nowadays. Especially with all the social media, we're seeing this forward drift of the head, and you know, I call it that the technological age posture. Mm. I call it TAP, TAP, and it's real. And I'm seeing it more and more. And we got to offset that. Here's what we know at the higher end of the game: when structural posture or muscular balance gets outside of a neutral range, plus or minus 15 degrees, like the curves in your back start to get bigger or flatter, or the muscle balances from right to left start drifting above 15 degrees, risk of injury goes up exponentially. And we can start offsetting that just by doing a really structured, good warm-up with our kids. It's so simple to do. And not only that, not only do we keep them lined up and keep their postures healthy, it has big implications on performance outcomes as well. Hitting, throwing, and running.
And I want to stay on the strength. I know you said, you know, that comes along, you know, a little later also. Let's take a fundamental like pitching. You know, a young kid struggling. He can't throw strikes because possibly, you know, a lot of times you hear he might be weak on his backside, his elbows drop. How does a coach make a correction in that? Does he develop the strength aspect a little bit? I mean, I'm not talking about weight lifting or anything like that, but is there anything that a coach can do?
Yeah, there are. And again, this is where being able to address the individual athlete is so important. Mm. And, you know, you're going to have young kids that either grow fast or grow slow. Some develop early, some develop late. So every coach is going to be challenged with these issues. Here's the deal with strength, okay? It can really, really hamper performance if it's not done right. And if you're going into the weight room, beware. Major red zone area for injuries, especially if you don't know what you're doing. But I have rarely seen, it's getting better now because we got really good young experts all over the map now working with athletes. But in the past, historically, we've seen major, I guess, strategical errors being made in the weight room. There's many different ways to change the body in the weight room. And listen to me carefully. The weight room physically, physiologically, neurologically changes your body. And if you change it the wrong way, you destroy sport performance. So my advice, okay, if you're looking to get into a strength program, even if it's just body weight strength, which is every kid can do it. Our 8-year-olds do, you know, they do lunge walking and body weight squats and, you know, pull-ups on the chain link fence. Mm-hmm. And we helps them get coordinated, but also gives them that little extra, I guess, just body awareness that comes out of those body weight exercises. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, a little bit of strength, but it's more coordination, just body awareness at that point. But as you get older and you're looking to really maybe attack an issue of a young player, you have to know what you're doing. Seek out a very capable and certified strength and conditioning coach. And here's the guidelines. The NSCA, National Strength and Conditioning Association, CSCS certified strength coach, certified strength and conditioning specialist. Those are the letters you need to see behind your guy's name.
Okay.
And that's just the standard. Okay. As an example, and just to give you an example of that, a strength coach cannot work in Major League Baseball unless he's NSCA, National Strength and Conditioning Association, certified strength and conditioning coach. You cannot get a job.
Interesting.
And that's because that fitness world is as dark and crazy as the nutrition world.
Wow.
Because there's no real regulations. The NSCA is sort of the golden standard right now. Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know, we're just last thing on this subject, because we're going to get emails about it, and they ask us a lot of listeners. What about plyo balls? What about bands? Anything like that?
Any sort of power exercise you're going to do had better be very, very simple. And you better have a reason for doing it. And, you know, in the conversation here in Vancouver, this is the theme of my talk. Okay? You only do something unless it serves a purpose. All right?
Not just to do it.
Not just to do it. And so if you're thinking about plyo balls or weighted balls, which are as dangerous as the weight room, especially if one, the athlete's not ready for it, or two, maybe they don't have an accomplished throwing movement at the time. What do weighted balls do then? Well, they just sort of take you through a real poor throwing motion and increase the risk of injury. We know baseball's already a big enough risk of injury,
absolutely,
right? So you have to be very, very careful. We do use weighted balls, but we break it down and we use them to teach force application. We break it down. We break down the segments of throwing or hitting so they can actually feel what it's like to apply force. And you can do that with the youngest of kids, but you can't throw a weighted ball at 100% based on something you saw on the freaking internet, especially if you don't know where your athlete's at in terms of their context. I call it, and in the book you'll read about it, athlete context is what I call it. Where does the athlete come from? Where are they at? And where are they projecting to go? Very, very important things. And so, you know, when we look at the developmental model, there's times for that stuff. But there's also a progression to get to those things. Now, the bands, beautiful. Love them, man. So simple, so great. Just a great external stress on the body that can really, really be helpful, even at the youngest age. Plus, those bands make it fun. Kids feel like they're pros. Yep. They're pulling some bands. And it really does actually, it can help them work on postural control if the coach is coaching them.
And it could be harmful too then.
It can be very harmful. It's like we talked about earlier. If you have a kid just out there swinging a bat, mm-hmm, without a coach coaching him how to hit. Now, don't get me wrong. You said something pretty, very, very smart at the start of this whole thing. The body will organize itself. Mm-hmm. If you look back in the day, man, there was not a hitting coach on planet Earth. And these guys were mashing.
Now we got millions of them.
There are millions. And they're breaking it down. And, yeah, and I'm not picking on hitting coaches.
But
I'm saying athletes will typically learn how to get things done. Now, there are strategies and tricks to the trade. We've learned this through all the science we have now. It's a beautiful marriage of sports science now and development. And you can start applying it at the youngest levels. We just have to stay real. The number one objective up until an athlete decides they want to, you know, maybe make the varsity team, or they want to go to college, or they want to maybe represent their country and wear that flag, or whether they're trying to go pro, it has to be fun. And one of the biggest challenges I had at the big league level working with the guys every single day, Groundhog Day, baseball, Groundhog Day, is trying to keep it fun. And so you have to find ways just to keep it fun. And for the kids, we know the number one reason they play sport is to have fun.
Absolutely.
The number one reason they're dropping out, they're not having
fun.
Getting better, ladies and gentlemen, here's the good news. As coaches, getting better
is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll never have more fun.
Yep.
Look at their faces the first time they make great contact with a ball,
yep,
or the first time they turn a double play when they're 9 years old. Oh, we got them. Love it.
And that's, you know, and that's looking at, like you said, the individual, looking at his what little weakness he might have and trying to make that a strength so that he feels better about it.
Well, and it's tough for volunteer coaches to go there even,
yep,
Pete. And that's why, you know, I think these conferences like this that we're doing, the LTAD and, you know, all the resources these organizations are providing for the coaches are really, really good. And, you know, for the most part, parents have some
game intelligence when it comes to baseball. If you're coaching, you know, you can even just watch the game and pick up some good things. Maybe you didn't play, or maybe you just played as a kid, but you understand the game. Mm-hmm. And from there, I'm telling you right now, you'll know when it's time to intervene. But up until a certain point, the kids just need to go out and they just need to build. They just need to build their base of experience. They need a body of work. Yeah. And that could take up to 10, 11, 12 years of age. They need to go out and we don't need to be, you know, ramping up performance and really stressing kids out to be better, because we don't know. We have no idea, absolutely zero idea who's going to be good and who's not going to be good at the end of the day. It's hard enough when they're 16. It's still almost impossible when they're 18. Look how many top draft picks in the last 20 years have actually turned out to be major contributors to the game at the highest level.
Yeah.
Not many.
Yep.
So I think, you know, just through sheer numbers, our goal as developmental coaches, let's keep kids involved. And then if one of them just catches fire and decides they love this game, let's put them on the path to help him achieve his goals, or see, at least see how far he can go.
Absolutely. Now, I want to stay a second with the warm-ups. Then we're going to get to your book also. You know, you had the agility warm-ups at the beginning. Those are fun. Kids like that stuff because they're always moving. Now that practice is over, is there anything now that the coaches should be stressing either during practice or after practice? After practice can be a little boring in some of the things I've seen.
Yeah. Well, no, and this has been rethought time and time again. So a couple things. So like if we have a warm-up, just let's say we have a 10-minute warm-up. Okay, we like the kids just to go for maybe a center field jog and back. Okay, just as a group, and they can joke around and, you know, have fun. Then we get them into their 10-yard grid. We go sprint, 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 back pedal. We do our 10-yard grid. We'll do some marching drills and some lunge walking. And then we'll get everybody lined up in a line, and we'll do some arm circles, upper body, trunk twists. And then we'll just start running some longer sprint, 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 back pedals. That takes about 5, 6, 7 minutes. And if that's where you want to end it, that's fine. I like to end with some kind of agility drill, whether it's a two ball paw pass or whether it's a four corner agility drill. I call it position agilities and then go throw. So once we're done our warm up, we do a full out, you know, maybe it's a four corner drill where the cones are four paces apart. They'll sprint up, they'll shuffle across, they'll backpedal, shuffle, and then they'll tight corner, and then they go get a drink and they go play catch. Here's the thing. That dynamic warm-up that I talked about, those high knee marches and those lunge walks and those arm circles, that's what we call dynamic warm-up. Very, very rare do we ever want to see the static stretching, the old-time static stretching. Sit down, stretch for 30 seconds, hold it for 30 seconds. That is the way – that's kind of like old thinking. What we know about the human body right now, it's kind of like strength training. Once the flexibility is there, you don't need to develop it, you know, 30 seconds before you play the game. In fact, there's a lot of research out there that shows static stretching, if you do it hard enough, long enough, can actually increase risk of injury and decrease sport performance, because it actually fatigues the muscle. Mm. So here's what we do. We know that at the end of every practice, we get the kids circled up. We get them doing a really good static stretch. And it could be 5, 6 minutes. It could be 3 minutes, depending on how much time you have. But it is a great way to end the day. The body's warm. The body really responds to static stretching when it's warm. And that's your time to develop it. So you don't have to do that sort of thing at the start of your practice. Okay. Now, if athletes do psychologically want to do a little static stretch, the rule is don't hold it longer than 6 seconds. Mm. So if I was going to do a stretch with my arm coming across my body, it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to the end point, and then I just swing it out. That's all we would ever do. Static stretch at the end of practice. Here's the beauty of this for coaches. Circle up. Get one of the players in the middle. Maybe you have to run the stretch, you know, for 4 or 5 times at the start of the year. Sure. Then you get a different player each practice and game to run your stretch.
It's a learning process.
Yeah, and they could run. They can just do whatever stretches they want. It's great. It's a few upper body, a few lower body. Get the hamstrings, get the groin. Exactly. And you could walk around and talk to each player. Hey, Joey, great job today in the middle infield. I really like what you did there. Hey, Jill, way to track that ball in the outfield today. I really like how you hit today as well. Hey, remember, next time, help me remember that we're really going to work on your first step out there. Can you help me? You walk around and talk to each kid at the end of practice. Man, they go home. Man, coach. Coach Pete told me this, man. Coach Pete, boom. And I'm just telling you, they also build life skills.
Yes.
You know, and it's just, that's the power. That's the true power of sport, Pete, you know? And so all those little periods away from the game are as important as the game to me.
You know, you got to love that. Saying, coaches, if you got that kind of passion going to the field, could you imagine how excited the players would get? Now, let's talk about, we talked about the warm-ups, but let's talk about some of our coaches, our volunteers. You know, they can only practice a couple days a week. And you can address any coach you like, whether it be that coach or also the coach who practices a lot. The skills need to be practiced a lot in baseball. It's not a sport where you can practice one day a week and then get better that day. What recommendations do you have for coaches to allow their kids to maybe practice on their own? What should kids be doing on their own? Similar things that you're doing in practice? Because again, if you do it once a week, are you going to get any better?
Yeah, once a week is tough. Yeah. Once a week is tough. But again, you gotta understand what the goals and directives of your program is. If it's to give kids a baseball experience once a week in a game, beautiful. If you're trying to develop young players, I think maybe you should start rethinking your priorities, because I don't think that should be the goal at any age until the guys start maturing physically, right? We want them playing multiple sports. So, you know, one practice a week with a game, two exposures a week to baseball, depending what age group you're talking about and depending the goals of your athletes, mm-hmm. could be the most perfect scenario to keep kids involved.
Yeah.
Now, if you got kids that are hungry and they want to play, and man, they're, you know, baseball is their game, and you have a condensed season, well, you know, away from the ballpark, I would just really emphasize, you know, the things that you taught that particular day. Throwing is something, and this is what makes baseball unique. You can hit all day, you can run all day. That's fine. You know, practice on what coach, hey, go home, practice Tuesday, Wednesday, what I taught you, and we'll see you next Friday. But when it comes to throwing, we have got to make sure that our families and our parents, as well as our players, understand that we really do have to limit the amount of throwing that we do, especially through those growth years. And when those bones are getting longer, every one of those young joints is more susceptible to injury. That's the most dangerous time in an athlete's development, especially for the throwing motion, the throwing athletes. So we have to be careful with playing catch. I would set strict guidelines. Hey, go play catch. And I would get the parents engaged here as well, because that's one thing I love about the guys here in Vancouver.
Yep,
they attack the coaches. They really try to spend time with the kids, but they try to get the parents involved, because let's face it, nobody's going to have more influence on a young athlete than the parents and the coaches. So, you know, if you had practice once a week, game once a week, hey, go play with your brother or your mom, play catch for 10 minutes two other times this week, everybody, make sure you get it done. Mm-hmm. And whether they do or not, some will play catch 100 times. Some might be doing something, we don't know.
Sure.
But setting up those, I agree with you. It's really,
you know, and coaches, and that's a great point, you know, that Jeff brought up. And, you know, think about it. If a player's not, you know, he's failing a little bit. I mean, you could ask the question, if you don't enjoy that, what are you going to do about it? You know, and that maybe that kid's going to play more catch.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, if you see a kid struggling, and this is the power of coaching, you could just take little Johnny aside. I mean, you see he's struggling, or little Jill aside, and just give them something to sink their teeth into. Yeah. And it might have nothing to do with a baseball in their hand. It might be, hey, for this time, can you go get two old shoes and put them 5 yards apart? And all I want you to do is just go run back and forth. I want you to do it five times, run back and forth, hit that, go six times. They're doing something.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if it is something to do with their throwing mechanics, you know, come up with a simple tennis ball drill that can maybe help them progress to get through. But I'm telling you, whatever problems they're having through their growth curve and their developmental years has nothing to do with teaching. We just have to keep it positive, man. Sure. Because as they mature and their nervous systems are out of whack and their brains are developing and, you know, everything's coming together, it doesn't matter what we do, they're not going to be able to do it. So we just got to keep it fun and just show them a little bit of progress. And that's where a pat in the back at the end of the day, nothing more powerful.
Yeah.
No.
Well said, man. You talk throwing now. Real quick question on pitching, and not, you know, because we can get into an hour of that, 2 hours of pitching. But, you know, there obviously there's programs out there. USA Baseball's got the Pitch Smart program, Major League Baseball, Baseball Canada. They can follow that. The coaches can as far as pitch counts and watching how much kids pitch. What I'm really interested in is once they do pitch, especially young kids, what do you recommend for these young kids after they pitch, what to do to recover?
Well, and this is great. So the big controversy, ice or not to ice, yeah. And there's, you know, that's a big conversation to have. It depends what resources you have. If you like ice, ice, not a big deal. You know, you have to know what to do. But we're really starting to rethink what happens after. Here's what we know. Here's what our guys have done for 20-plus years, Pete, maybe even more. After any type of exercise, we do a cool-down jog. And for our elite athletes, it's 10 to 12 minutes at 50%. We know the body will recuperate 90, 95% quicker if you do that than if you just take it to the house. And that includes throwing a baseball. That goes out throwing off the mound. And now those numbers, that's based on pretty solid science and human physiology. We know the priorities for the body after intense exercise, which would be a bullpen. That's mm-hmm. intense.
Sure.
Throwing in a game is intense. I don't care what age you're at. All right? So the body's priority post-exercise will be to make sure that the blood gets back to normal, the chemistry of the blood. The waste material's got to go out. The energy levels and the nutrients circulating to the brain have got to be back to where they need to be before the body will start worrying about anything else. Now, it's not that cut and dry, but you got to understand that's kind of the priority system.
Sure.
So until that's taken care of, nothing else really starts getting fixed up. Every time you throw a baseball, there's little micro tears and there's little damage inside of the body that has to be fixed before you go again. Here's the biggest problem. And I think one of the reasons over the last, 5 to 10 years, we've seen so many injuries in baseball. We're just now starting to grasp. Well, we knew it, but we, for some reason, maybe collectively as a group of baseball people, we turn our heads from it. Baseball is a violent, brutal movement, mm-hmm. throwing a baseball. And we know the body can perform incredible amounts of work, but it needs the recovery. Every one of our programs, I'm going to give you 4 really major tips. Everybody just listen, please.
Perfect.
And this is just my model. And if anybody on the planet Earth and in this known physical universe can change my mind now, I'll take you out for a steak dinner for sure. Because over the years, Pete, we've just seen athletes fall apart and destroyed because we just didn't have the right environment for them. And it had a lot to do with that planning process we talked mm-hmm. about. So we've set up a hardcore list of 4 top priorities. And you will hear me, and you've probably heard me say these before, because it doesn't matter what level of coaches I'm talking to or even what sport I'm talking to, you will hear me say these 4 anytime I get in front of people who are involved in sport. Number 1, every one of our programs is built around the amount of rest an athlete can get on any given day, week, month, or year. Our annual plans are built around quality rest. And inside of that, the top priority for human performance in any endeavor is sleep. Okay? And our sleep science is irrefutable and it's all important. We're hearing it in the NBA now. We're hearing it at the Olympics. We hear it at the Super Bowl. The strategies at the Super Bowl this year. It's just fantastic. Finally, thank goodness. Hallelujah. Priority number 1, rest and recovery. Everything we do is built around that. Our weekly programs for our young athletes. Okay. Number 2 is nutrition, hydration. Without those 2 things, nothing else matters. If we're talking about just true performance, right? Human development. If we don't have those 2 things taken care of, everything else is substandard. I don't want to say substandard, but it's not what it could be. Does that make sense?
Sure, sure.
So rest, recovery, recuperation, and sleep, number 1, without question. This is our model. Number 2, our nutrition, hydration, and we have all the protocols set up. Number 3, posture. You have to have your posture aligned, and you have to have postural or corrective postural exercises in your program to offset the stresses of the sport, because the sport, baseball, will take you to one side, and that's just the nature of the beast. So we have to counter that with just some constructive exercises, and at every level I'm talking about, because as soon as you start swinging a bat one way and throwing a baseball one way, those asymmetries begin. And then 4, movement. But you have those 3 things taken care of, the fun stuff, now you can teach your athletes to move. And that's the 4 priorities. From there, let the magic begin. Because if you have those 4 things set up, you've created probably the best environment possible for an athlete to succeed no matter what their goals are.
So those four things, even after pitching, I mean, if you follow those protocols, you know, because we're always thinking, you know, to recover the arm, it's always got to do with the shoulder, the arm itself.
No, not at all. The arm is it's a part of the whole unit, right? Yeah. You got to recover everything. The arm won't get fixed until everything's taken care of. Trust me. It's not a priority in any way, shape, or form. In human physiology, the priority is the brain. And so until everything is taken care of and the brain is happy, nothing else matters. So don't think your body prioritizes the arm. Now, if it's damaged, right, and sure, after every time you throw it is, there is a priority there. But it's not the top priority. And there's ways to do it for sure. So, you know, the easy jog afterwards, you know, we're starting to use light throwing as a recovery from throwing, you know, just to get that night. And it would be the same as with our sprinters. You know, we do that light, easy recovery, 50% recovery jog to help the whole body recover. Wow. So we're going to do a light jog and maybe just some really easy, effortless throwing to help the arm recover, if it's not sore and damaged, of course.
And that brings up another point, and we're going to get to the book. We're almost done here. Young kids, a lot of times, don't want to tell their coaches, you know, their elbow hurts or there's a pain, or they don't know any better. And yet the coaches also don't know any better. So any advice that you can give on that would be awesome.
Yeah, no, Pete, and Pete, you've tugged on one of my heartstrings here, because this is probably we know when kids aren't having fun, they drop out.
Yeah.
We know that coaches that yell and scream and call names and don't play them, that's the number one reason kids don't enjoy sport. Mm-hmm. We know right up there is the ride home with the parents. Parents on the ride home, encourage, don't even talk about the game unless your athlete wants to talk about the game. Don't, unless you're going to pat them on the back and, hey, great game. No, tough. You know, just be positive. Mm-hmm. That's the role of the parent. Sure. Okay. Injuries are one of the major reasons kids don't play sport anymore. We know first injury, kids return. Second injury, very, very few kids return.
Wow.
And the numbers are staggering. So here's the deal. Coaches, at every single level, okay, an injury is an opportunity. And it's spring. If I was with a major league team right now, or if you guys were with me when I was with the Blue Jays, or when we go to our next MLB camp, this will be part of the conversation opening day of the camp. Okay, guys, everybody listen. Injuries are part of sport. Okay, at some point in the conversation, this will happen. Injuries are part of sport. So let's embrace them. They're going to happen. We're going to work our butts off to minimize the risk and try to avoid injuries at all costs. That's our number one priority of every strength and conditioning program. Number one, okay, rest, recovery, sleep, nutrition, posture. It's all about injury prevention. And right after that, performance. But listen, when you do get injured, it's an opportunity. And if we can frame it like this, the psychology of the athlete changes. Not that they're going to go out and play crazy and get injured, but we know what an injury can do to an athlete's psyche. At the highest level, it's devastating. At the developmental levels, we don't want to lose them from sport.
Right.
So if we frame injuries as an opportunity to get better, hey, man, all right. Okay, we know injuries are part of sport. Let's embrace it. When you're injured and you can't play baseball, let's do everything around baseball that you can to help you become a better baseball player when you come back. And we do this with our pro players, and it is a game changer. Psychologically, we've seen return to play time shrink like crazy. No. Not only that, when our athletes return to play, they're better baseball players than before they got injured. So while everybody's out playing baseball and working on their baseball skills, we might have somebody coming in working on their scapular stabilization or their core posture or maybe their visual performance. And then we tie that in as they get ramping up back to return to play programs. We take all this new development and we wrap it into their performance. And when they step back on the field, finally, after the return to play protocols from their injury, everybody goes, whoa, where did this cat come from?
Yeah.
Dynamite. An injury is an opportunity at every level.
You know, we told you, you know, our audience, we told you this was going to be an explosive show. I didn't think it was going to be this explosive. This is outstanding. And I got to ask you this, because we sat here earlier. Now, you go around the world setting up academies for Major League Baseball doing the development program. You've worked with Major League players. You've worked with Olympic athletes. But yet you told me right here as we're sitting in the booth, where you said you keep it simple and you keep it the same in everything you do with most of all your athletes at all levels. Explain that, because I want our coaches to really understand that, because we sometimes coaches believe, you know, the word I'm losing a little bit is, you know, the not the important, but the the tough things, the harder things, or the more complicated it is, the more important it is. But yeah, you keep it real simple.
Yeah, no. There's if you're perplexed or if you're wondering, hey man, what are we doing? I want you just to step back and take a breath and just say one word for me. Just go simple. Keep it simple. I have over the years learned the absolute power of simple. Especially when you entwine it into something that looks incredibly complicated or so enormous it seems impossible. If you can intertwine simple into any problem you have, you're not going to believe how easy it is to get good, if not even great, at whatever you're doing, right? So don't make it complicated, because I'm just telling you right now, most things aren't. Things get complicated when we make them complicated. And a trick to the trade here is when we look at a developmental program for an athlete. And Pete, it could be a long-term plan for a 10-year-old who we're projecting to be in the Olympics when they're 16, right? Mm-hmm. It might be a young kid who maybe had a developmental issue and we're trying to get him running by the time he's 12 and he's 10, right? So what we do is we look at where we want to be in a certain period of time and we reverse engineer it. And we go step by step, okay, so this is what I want to be at this point in time. Like our kids getting ready for the draft this year. Mm-hmm. We're getting close now. Hey, it's spring. Yep. And then it's a big, big year for a lot of high school players out there. And so last year at this time, a year ago this time, we said, okay, where do we need to be next spring when the scouts really start cracking down to see if they want to sign you or if the college recruiters want to give you a scholarship? What do you need to look like? Is it running speed? Is it agility? Is it throwing? Is it body composition? Is it coordinate? Whatever it is. Okay, well, because here's the thing. There's nothing we can't train. Mm. You challenge me.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I will come up with a solution as to how we can help that athlete move towards that goal. Now, here's the question. How good can an athlete get? We don't know until they've gone through the process. So when things look complicated, here's the trick of the trade. Just reverse engineer it and keep it simple. The simple building blocks will lead the way to the future.
Outstanding. Well, you heard it here. So we're going to end with something that's I think is important, because Jeff just came out with a brand new book, The Performance Plan. I'm going to let you explain the book. I know it's on Amazon. Everybody can get it. And listen, folks, if you didn't get excited by this show, I'm not sure what else you're going to get excited about, because you heard a lot of great stuff. I learned a ton of stuff here, and I've known Jeff a long time. There isn't anybody, in my opinion, better than this in the business. So don't forget, go to his website. You know, it's crushperformance.com. You know, he's also on Twitter at Jeff Crush. You know, interact with him. You know, send all your followers, you know, forward all his information out there, because the things he's talking about are critical to the development of our sport, and we need to get it out there. And he's done this all over the world. He understands it well. So tell our audience a little bit about the book. And if you like, finish it off with any advice also that you might have that maybe we didn't get a chance to talk about.
Yeah, ooh, that's a tall order right there. We could be here for a while. But no, hey, I appreciate the plug for the book. So this is The Love of Labor. It's my first book. And I'm going to tell you right now, yeah, it's my first one, and I've been asked for years, Jeff, do you have a book? Do you have a book? And, yeah. And I will tell you something, Pete. I've been asked, and I'm an avid reader myself. And I honestly, I'd never had the inspiration to write a book, because I'd often thought that everything that needs to be written has been. Because there's some great, great books out there that have changed my life and my perspective on life and my perspective on athlete development. Just great stuff. So I just honestly never thought I had anything that was – not worthy of contributing, but I just, anything new. Why rewrite something, right? Until I spoke at a conference a couple years ago, and one of the delegates I spoke with came up to me after, said, Jeff, you got a book? And I said, no. I kind of gave him that story, right? Just, I've never thought, yeah, you know, everything's been written. He goes, no. He says, yeah, everything's been written. And I said, plus, you know, that getting published, publishers, literary agent, all right. That. I don't have any time, Pete. I don't have time or patience for that stuff. So he goes, well, listen. He says, getting published is easy. He had three or four books already published. He goes, you know, it's easy to get published. And he said, you can self-publish now if you don't want to go through that rat race, yep. You know. And that appealed to me. And I like that, because there's no time frames. I don't have to deal with any soap opera crap. And just keep it simple, like we said, right? Yep. But when it came to actually writing the book, he said something to me. He says, Jeff, listen. You know what? All the things you're talking about, there's, you know, people, but no one's quite, this is what he said to me, and I was humbled and flattered, so I'm not pumping my tires. This is what he said to me. He said, I've never heard anybody quite say it like you've said it. He said, I'd buy that book. Yeah. And I'm going, huh. And I told my wife that when I got home, and she goes, hey, Jeff, you know, you got your radio show. Why do you do your radio show? I said, well, to help people. She goes, what do you think a book might do? And I got thinking, well, maybe if I just put down some of my ideas, maybe we could help a kid out. Maybe we could help a coach out,
sure.
A business owner, an employee, a coach, an administrator. And so the book's called The Performance Plan. And when I sat down, okay, what do I write? There's so much to write, Pete. And when I started writing, you should see my book of things to write. I said, okay, holy smokes. So here's what's happened. This is installment number one. If you were an athlete or an organization that came to me, I said, okay, where do I start? I said, at the setup. How do you get the perspective,
sure,
to move forward with direction and purpose? How do you get the idea of taking a group of people and giving them purpose and helping each one of them achieve their goals while your whole organization is moving forward? So this book is the start. As if you were my athlete or my client sitting down with me, where do we start?
Mm-hmm.
Here's everything that I want to be thinking about to map out your plan for your future. Where does it go, Pete? I don't know. We don't know how good you can get until we go through the process. But if you don't understand the process at the beginning, damn it, it's hard to navigate.
Sure.
So I think my hopes for this book, and again, my first crack at writing, and I don't know if it's clear. I read it back 100 times and I've changed it 100 times, but finally there it is. I hope people might get a perspective on maybe what they should be thinking about if they're planning a future, theirs or somebody else's. So I'm pretty proud of it, and for what it's worth, as much feedback as possible would be dynamite to maybe even help me recalibrate my thinking.
Sure.
But I hope it will help some people out.
All right, and last minute advice. I know you got it, and don't worry about the time. We got plenty of time. And although, just so you know, Jeff's got to get on stage pretty soon because we got 2 hours before the actual presentation. And I know you don't need to prepare, but you do prepare. So last minute advice you have for our coaches and players and parents around the world.
There are great people out there, Pete, you being one of them. Been honored to know you for so many years. And a lot of the delegates here in Vancouver, where I just came from in Poland,
yeah,
with ISG, the group in Italy, the guys down to the Texas Baseball Ranch, the guys everywhere, there's great people. Reach out. Ask questions and reach out. And most importantly, I guess maybe the advice I'd have for anybody at any stage, take a step back, look at your plan. If you don't have one, set it up and move forward with purpose. If you're moving forward with purpose, whether it's right or wrong, at least you're accomplishing something. And I'm telling you right now, it's hard to correct and make adjustments if you don't have that plan. And your plan will change along the way. But set it up, point your compass, work your way in that direction, and you'll find that things will come together for you.
You know, all right, we heard a key word, plan, and you know why Jeff's been so successful, obviously, because he plans out his stuff really well. Folks, thanks for listening. I would recommend that you listen to this podcast, this particular podcast, 2-3 times, because I think you're going to learn a lot more than just by listening at one time. So go through it a couple times. Contact Jeff. Go on Twitter, at Jeff Crush. Go to his website. He's got a lot of great information, crushperformance.com. Remember to go to Facebook, Crush Performance. But go to the Talent Grid on Facebook, join that group. You'll get it. And make sure also when you join that you also have some things to share with everybody out there, because it's all about sharing. It's all about getting better. Want to thank Jeff for being on the show. I know you got to get to the complex. So thanks a lot, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Pete. I can't wait to do it again, my man.
All right, there we go. Don't forget now, to all our listeners around the world, don't forget we're also on Twitter, always trying to give some great advice on Twitter, at Baseball Out. Join us, share it. Go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com, our Facebook, Baseball Outside the Box. We've got a lot of great information. If you need to email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox, please do. I love getting your emails. I'll get back to you right away. Thank you to Brian Kroc with, again, our producer, Brian Kroc, on the other side of the window. Thanks to Jeff Crochelle. And remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love the challenge of status quo. I am your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.